Hey folks, I'm Amir Haleem and this is the Point Podcast. Our point people today, urban affairs expert, instructor from Calgary, Nahed Nenshi, and our very special guest point person, Trish Stratus, former WWE wrestler and current TV personality.
Barbie manufacturer Mattel says three dolls are sold every second, and she's changed a lot since her debut. She's had over 100 careers, including
Barbie as the island princess. An all-new movie starring Barbie as Rose, a shipwrecked girl.
It's always troubling when a brand has so much power and exercises so much influence on impressionable young girls. Barbie, if she were a real-life person, she couldn't stand up.
You can tell it's Mattel. It's swell.
Barbie turns 50 this year, and she's being feted in style. Designers created Barbie-themed clothes for a runway show during New York's Fashion Week, and there's even a party planned in a life-size Malibu dream house. But you know what? Not everyone's celebrating. You just heard the voice of Sydney Donatelli, a professor of women's studies at the University of Manitoba. Like many of Barbie's critics, Professor Donatelli objects to the super thin, super busty doll status as an ideal image for the female body. Barbie may have held every job from cheerleader to presidential candidate, which is why we asked this question to our point people. Does that make her qualified to be a female role model? Let's begin with you, Trish. Is Barbie a good physical role model?
Yes, particularly because she has large breasts and a small waist.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding. Just thought I'd throw you off a little bit there.
That's great.
She's
talking about yoga, in case you people were wondering.
Yeah, of course, yes. This is the thing. I understand the whole body image, and let's look at this woman as, let's nitpick her image and what she looks like. But when it comes down to it, she really does represent something. She has, she's a strong, powerful woman,
mm-hmm.
Often more in charge than a man can. And, she had career choices. She represents that women have choices, and I think that's important. So I think if you can move beyond her image just by looking at her and think about what she represents on a whole, and I think, yeah, she definitely is a good role model for kids. I know she was for me.
Nahed, what about for you? Was the young woman from Willows, Wisconsin, a role model for you or for your female friends?
Well, I think of my 5-year-old niece when I think about these things, and she's not into Barbie yet. I'm sure that she will be eventually. But she sort of has two role models that she follows. And it's interesting to me to see how they're both quite different. I'm a marketing prof in my off-air life, and I do think a lot about brands and how they work. The first role model that my 5-year-old niece follows is Dora the Explorer. And Dora is a little girl, and she's spunky, and she explores, and she's very, very independent, and so on. But the other one, which is interesting because I don't think she's seen any of the films, I don't think that she has been really exposed to it, but it's fallen into her life anyway, is the whole Disney princesses thing, where Disney has packaged up all of its female leads into one mega brand. And at my niece's 5-year-old birthday party, she wanted the princess castle and all of that. And so I think that it's absolutely the case that these kinds of brands, especially when they're personified in this way, do act as role models for young girls and young boys as well, and we can talk more about that. And so my real question is, I agree with everything Trish is saying, that Barbie's kind of neat because she's had all these careers and she's done all these different things. But you have to wonder, would Barbie have been a credible presidential candidate if she didn't look the way that she did, if Barbie was, in fact, a credible presidential candidate? And I think that that it really does start with the look. And does that change girls' body image? Does it make them make unhealthy choices? I think the jury's still out on that.
What do you think, Trista? Does it, in fact, affect or add to the body image problems that some young girls have as they're growing up because they've started out with Barbie as a role model, so
well,
to speak?
I look at it like when I was a child, I was a big fan of Barbie. When I graduated from high school, I got a collector set of Barbies, and that kind of began my collection of Barbies. But the thing that was important was that my mom was there always. She did the parenting side of it. So whatever toys I played with, whatever dolls I had, and whatever they represented, my mom was the one. My parents were the one who said, "Oh, and we want to make sure you play sports, and we want to make sure that you're intelligent and you go to school." So that comes down to parenting at the end of the day. I mean, whatever toys you play with, you know, hours of entertainment, great. But at the end of the day, it's your parenting, and that's the one who shapes you and forms, you know, one's role model as a youth.
But they didn't specifically say, oh, and by the way, this is an unrealistic role model, your Barbie dolls, right? They didn't parent you that way. And I guess that's what we're getting at with our question, mm-hmm. is that in terms of the physical role model that she represents and presents, is that healthy or unhealthy for influential minds?
Well, I don't think it's a bad thing. The funny thing, I can relate a little bit to Barbie, believe it or not, is I have a little bit of the blonde looks going on, and some people call me Barbie doll look typing, you know, kind of looks. And the thing is when I started back in the day in fitness modeling, and I always said that once, you know, with the modeling, people used to say, well, how do you feel about being a sex symbol and you're showing, you know, your body on the magazines and whatnot. But what I looked at it was like, okay, now that I got your attention, now you can listen to me. And, you know, I had a voice at that point. So now, you know, so I look at it maybe the same way. I mean, you just, you know, you don't know what's going on inside.
And mm-hmm. We should mention also that you have an action figure of your own. And and do you approve, or do you like the image that figure represents? Again, so to speak, no pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I was trying to get one on eBay because I missed it.
Well, there's eight different varieties, so you can have
there's
your fun.
There's eight different ones.
Yeah, wow. I know.
Different outfits and whatnot. Well, what they've done with those figures, actually, they're really closely matched to the person. They do like a digital imaging, so they actually really are a close replica. Yeah, they are, just a little shorter.
Now, Nahed, you know, some people might say, just a little shorter, just slightly shorter. Some people might say, Nahed, that, you know, what's wrong with the image that Barbie has projected from 1959 up until today? I mean, let's face facts and let's be honest. I mean, we're attracted to a particular image, and that image, I think, is reinforced by this particular model or style that Barbie represents in terms of her the body that they gave her. And to be quite honest, I mean, if they were to come out with a soft dig, a big, you know, a Barbie with bigger features, so to speak, or representing
a
bigger
big
features.
Big boned Barbie. There
exactly.
You go.
There you go. would they sell as well as the Barbie that we've known all these years?
I have an anecdote for you, which may or may not surprise you. In response to that question.
All right.
Settle in, kids. I teach a marketing class, and we have this exact discussion every semester about what comes first: the image fed by the media, or does the media image simply reflect what is desired?
Mm-hmm.
And I like to turn
mm-hmm.
this around on men, as a matter of fact. When I was in high school, not that long ago, was when Marky Mark first started doing his ads for Calvin Klein. And there were a couple of interesting things that came out of that. I remember when I was in my gym class in grade 10, we got to choose which modules you wanted to do. Did you want to play basketball or volleyball or track or whatever? And I remember that there was a module in weight training. And the interesting thing was, a bunch of 14, 15-year-old boys, nobody wanted to take the weight training. Because who does that? That's for, no offense, Trish, for wrestlers and for football players. Right? No one else would want to do that. No one wants to look that muscle-bound. And I
really?
Suggest that if you were to ask 13, 14-year-old boys today if that were the, you know, if they wanted to do a weight training module, they'd all be right into it.
Mm-hmm.
So did Marky Mark cause that, or was that caused by, you know, a general feeling in the media? So let's talk about a sensitive subject for a moment, chest hair. There's a study that shows that some 70 or 75% of undergraduate males shave or wax their chests. They remove their hair. And I've only ever had the guts to do this in my class once because of the results. So I asked the men in my class, how many of you shave or wax or laser your chests? And a few put up their hands. And I picked on one, kind of this big jock guy, and said, okay, so why do you do it? And he was a little embarrassed and sort of sputtered out, well, you know, it's because the girls like it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, okay, ladies in the class, who's into that? And there was just a general shrug. And one of the women put up their hands and said, I don't really care. In fact, sometimes when they shave it, it's like a little baby. I don't really like that. And this poor guy, all I could see on his face was all that waxing, all that laser treatment, all the time, all the money, all the pain. And he never thought to actually ask the girls if they liked it or not. But again, you know, when Marky Mark started with those ads for Calvin Klein, right, the paragon of the male figure was, let's call it David Hasselhoff, right? A hairier, less sculpted guy. And now that whole image has shifted. And, you know, we can see that that's happened in the male image, body image. And I wonder if it's the same in the female and what Barbie had to do.
I don't know if the image has shifted now. If you look, I mean, how long is, going back to Johnny Weissmuller, for those of you who enjoyed Tarzan or Charles Atlas, I mean, I think the image of whether it's male physicality or female physicality hasn't changed that much. Perhaps the training techniques, perhaps the vitamins, the supplements you can get, but ultimately the goal remains the same. Let's ask the nation what they think 50 years on. Did you just take a big gulp there, Nahid?
It wasn't me.
50 years on, should we still be celebrating Barbie, or is it time to regulate her into the big toy box in the sky? Go to our blog, cbc.ca/thepoint, or call 1-888-91-POINT. That's 1-888-917-6468. And now's a good time to bring us up to speed on what's going on in the life of Trish Stratus. Trish?
Well, I just finished filming my travel show called Stratosphere. We say that a lot, haven't we, today?
S-T-R-A-U-S. Anyway.
U-S, thank you, yes. I traveled the world, and I was able to do a different activity in these different places, and these activities sort of revealed something of the history and the cultures of these cities. So I was in, I did some Muay Thai boxing in Thailand. I did sword fighting in India, and it was a really amazing you know, sort of one of those things where I'm usually the person who gets to go to the airport and arena, and I don't get to see anything of these cities.
Right.
And now I got to explore the cities. So it was wonderful to do that. So that just, I just finished filming that, and it's on air right now on the Travel and Escape Network.
Did you did you also go to Iceland, by the way?
I did Glima Wrestling in Iceland.
Wow.
The reason I ask is because a friend of a friend was working on your show, and they were describing the reception you received. And I guess you were at Iceland at that point during the taping of your program, but the reception you received worldwide. So you're being very humble now, but I know for firsthand that you're beloved around the world, not only here in your home and native land.
And the India pictures in particular on your MySpace are super hot.
Oh, thank you. Hot, yes, because it was like 100 degree humidity and 35
degrees. And you're
wearing
like a cool sari and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I got the chance to really dip into the culture, and the people were really great about they were first of all so excited that we were coming there to explore their culture further.
Right.
So they were really great about giving me the foods, the dress, everything about their culture they were sharing with me. So I got the really neat opportunities. And opportunities of a lifetime, I must say.
So did you do yoga in India? I'm sure you did, right?
I did. I did one session with a yoga guru, and it was amazing. India, for some reason, from all the places, I mean, I went to Thailand, I went to Vietnam, I went to Fiji, New Zealand, I was in Bali, Indonesia, Java, Indonesia, and Iceland, Norway, and India, for me, it resonated the most with me. I think it's because of the yoga connection. I think it was just, doing the session with the yoga guru and just seeing the places. It's just a beautiful, beautiful place, and that's one of the places I definitely want to go back when I'm not working to visit.
Now, there are rumors abound, Trish, and you can set the record straight whether or not you're actually going to be returning to the wrestling ring anytime soon.
Well, I made a recent return, actually. I technically retired in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
They were here in Toronto in December of last year.
Right.
And they called me up and said, would you like to make an appearance? We'd love to have you. And I've always said this since I retired. I said, if it's the right moment or something, I mean, obviously you got to come out of retirement for something. So if it's one of these really unique situations that maybe someone I hadn't wrestled before or something. So turned out they presented this pretty amazing scenario, which was tagging with the world champion John Cena against Beth Phoenix, and people who don't know who that is, they're the top of the game, champs, and it was a pretty neat moment because it was a surprise for the Toronto crowd. So, and the same thing happens with WrestleMania. It's kind of like, I don't know if you know about how my career started, but it was spurred by a rumor. It was kind of like the internet was going crazy saying Trish Stratus was spotted by Vince McMahon is starting soon, and it was completely false. There was zero truth to that, and but it turned out to work out. So maybe this time, I don't know. I'm hearing these rumors as well.
Yeah.
I have nothing. I've not been contacted. We have not discussed it, but there's always open communication because if it's a good scenario, then I'm willing to kick some butt.
That's Nahid's maxim as well. He
has
that as well. Really quick,
or running away from getting my butt kicked, one or the other.
Exactly. And did you want to make a quick mention for about the charity work you've been doing as well?
Sure, yeah. I'm working with the Heart and Stroke Foundation, and it was wonderful to finally, I've been doing a lot of charity charity work, but with the Heart and Stroke Foundation particularly, to hook up with a group that really focuses on issues that I could, you know, I could sort of preach about. I mean, with my yoga studio, I'm able to, you know, take kids into the studio and do some physical fitness with them, show them the importance of fitness. Mm-hmm. And so it's been neat to say that these things you can manage and prevent the heart stroke as well as disease. So, it's been really great working with them. And stratosphereyoga.com is my yoga studio. If anybody's in Toronto, come and visit me. Downward Dogs.
I've already been given an open invitation. I thank you for that.
Well, I was giving that to everyone else, if you don't mind.
No. I'm saying I've already also been given an invitation, too, in addition to all of us who are going to be flocking to your yoga studio.
Yet you're still doing the show and not on a plane yet.
Yeah, well, once I do the show, I'm heading right to the airport. In the meantime, though, as we are carrying on with the show and going on to our next point, somewhat related to, I mean, we were talking about yoga, a non-contact sport for some. For others, there is a symposium going on right now in London, Ontario, on hockey violence that starts today. The event is getting a lot of attention, largely in part to the death last month of Don Sanderson. Don was killed after his head hit the ice in a fight. The tragedy has renewed calls for an end to fighting in hockey. Now, hockey is obviously not the most violent sport going. Trish, I'm sure you're familiar with complaints against pro wrestling and,
yes,
of course, the most recent, I guess, phenomenon in hand-to-hand combat, Ultimate Fighting Championship. So I guess the question to both of you is where does one draw the line when it comes to violence in sports?
Well, I think the first thing I've always said is you know, exposing your kids to sports and to violence, it's your responsibility as a parent to draw the line. So if you don't, I know I would get that all the time. Like you're right with the wrestling. It was like, well, how do you feel about portraying violence? Well, you know, we were just actors playing a role, and this is what our role was.
It's not real.
It's real. Now look away.
It is real.
Yeah, not with earmuffs.
But I was acting violent.
Right.
But I was really being violent.
Right.
What?
No, but seriously, you were just saying that your response to that would be what when people came up to you?
And I would just say, like, it's you have a converter in your hand, and it's, first of all, the parent's responsibility. If you don't want your kid to be watching that because you feel like they're going to be influenced enough to go out and do backyard wrestling, mm-hmm, then you should change the channel, or you should talk to them and let them know that this is what they do, this is not what you do. I hate to say it, but when I go to a game, what is the most exciting part? I hate to say that it's the fights. Everyone gets excited, and it's the entertainment aspect of it. So I think from, in the professional, let the pros do what they're doing, but I think maybe it's important to sort of do a little bit more schooling in the, you know, as the kids are coming up in these sports to learn, like to have really restrictions on the fighting and really, you know, enforce that as they're coming up. I mean, when it's a professional league, that's what the pros do and what the kids don't do kind of thing.
Now, Ed, what do you think?
Well, you know, I don't particularly have a problem with violence in wrestling for the reasons that Trish states, because, you know, once you hit 10 or 11 years old, you kind of know, even if you don't want to admit it to yourself, that there's mm-hmm a script and this is all done in that way. And similarly with UFC, I mean, the whole point of the Ultimate Fighting Championship is, well, fighting. But I think hockey is a whole different story. And, you know, you had Ron McLean on a few weeks ago on this show, Amir, mm-hmm, talking about this with my colleague Shelley, if I recall correctly, mm-hmm, here in Calgary. And I frankly could not believe what was being said. You know, the fact that, oh, well, it's a violent sport and, you know, fighting is a good way of getting the aggression out. And I thought, what kind of a message are we sending kids that if you have aggression or if you're mad, the right way to get it out is by fighting? You know, football is also a pretty violent sport. We don't see fights breaking out in football.
Oh, you do. You do see them breaking out.
Not every single night. And we certainly don't start the highlight reels every night on the news, not with the goals or the assists or the great saves, but with the fights. You know, this is a created phenomenon that the NHL is profiting from, and I think we have to admit that to ourselves. You know, fighting is not a part of hockey. It's part of the entertainment value that the NHL puts on, and that's a deliberate choice, and we've got to decide whether or not we want to make that choice or not.
But some players would say that, I mean, this is the argument that was brought up during our discussion with Ron and has preceded and will continue on, is that it's part of the game to, as an outlet, as a self-policing mechanism. The opponents to fighting, I mean, in addition to some of the points that you brought up, Nahed, also suggest that why aren't those people who are penalized tossed out of the game or suspended and whatnot? But you don't think if the Players Association thought it was a problem, I mean, they're also interested in their own their own personal health, their careers, if they thought that it wasn't a necessary part of the game, again, the self-policing angle, reducing of the stick work, that they would not object. They would say to the NHL, "You're exploiting us,"
because it's all part of the same scheme, right? You're seen as a big fighter. You're going to sell more jerseys with your name on them. You know, it bothers me, and I'm a hockey fan. Well, I'm a bandwagon fan. I'll admit it, but.
If you're known as the guy who scores the most goals, you're also going to sell those jerseys, no?
No, that's exactly right. But this is another way to get to that stardom, right? And it bugs me when I see kids on the streets of Calgary wearing jerseys that have Bertuzzi's name on the back. I mean, he maimed a guy. Or in Ottawa, you have kids with shirts that have Danny Heatley's name on the back. He killed a guy.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with fighting in hockey, though. Now, both those examples have nothing to do with fighting in hockey. The examples that you just brought up,
To be fair, the Heatley one is not much about that. It's about the cult of stardom among very young men.
No, but
the Bertuzzi one certainly is about violence in hockey. He did that as a revenge hit on something that Steve Moore was supposed to have done in a previous game.
Right, and he was penalized for it.
Penalized and back playing on a one-year contract for X million dollars for the Calgary Flames. You know,
and I think if they continue to have that kind of repercussion, then that is sending the right message at the end of the day.
Okay. Let's put it to the nation. As always, we'd love to hear what you have to say. 1-888-917-6468. That's 1-888-91-POINT. cbc.ca/thepoint is where you can post a comment to our blog. That's all the time we have. Thanks to our point people in Toronto, former WWE wrestler, current TV personality, and very special guest point person, Trish Stratus. And in Calgary, urban affairs expert and business instructor, Nahid Nenshi. You've been listening to The Point Podcast. You can check out the radio program, The Point, every day on CBC Radio 1 at 2 p.m., 2:30 in Newfoundland. I'm Amir Halim. Thanks for listening.